Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.
December the 12th, we're in Hosea, Treasure Hosea, Perek Ches, chapter 8. El Chikcha Shofar, Kanesher Al Beis Hashem. The Chich is the palate. That's what it means. The Chich is the palate. El Chikcha Shofar means you'll put the shofar to your mouth. Blow the shofar. Blow the shofar, Kanesher Al Beis Hashem, which would call the enemy to come as an eagle to the house of Hashem, in other words, to destroy the Beis HaMikdash. Yan Avru Vrisi, because they have gone against my covenant, Val Torasi Pasha'u, and they transgressed my Torah. Li Zaku, they will call out to me, meaning when the Tzara comes, they will call out to me, and they'll say, Elokai Yida'anucha Yisrael, my God, my Hashem, we have known you, Yisrael, meaning we are your nation. We're the ones who know you. But the problem is that Hashem says that I'm not prepared to listen to that. Zonach Yisrael Tov, the Jews have forsaken good. Oyev Yirdefo, and therefore the enemy will chase Yisrael. So what does it mean, Zanach Yisrael Tov? The Jews have forsaken or have rejected Tov. The Medrash says, Ein Tov Ela Torah. It's referring to Torah, that the Jews have rejected the Torah, and as a result, they are chased by the enemy. Heim Himlichu V'lo Mimeni. They made someone king, but it didn't come from me. They chose someone to make as king, but it wasn't by my word. Hesiru v'lo yadati. Now, hesiru has a double meaning. It either means hesiru from the word sar, as in a leader. So then it's like, it's the same idea as the first clause in the pasuk. They made a king that didn't come from me. They made a leader, a sar, and that it wasn't with my knowledge, which means they made it up on their own. The other way to read it is, Hesiru, substitute the sin for a samach. Sometimes the sin and the samach are interchangeable. And then it means, they removed, and it wasn't with my knowledge. Which means, they took the king that I wanted in place, removed that king, and instead, put their own idea of a king in place. Kaspam uzahavam asulahem atzabim. Their silver and their gold they made for themselves as idols. Leman yikares, in order that it be cut off. That's a little bit unclear what would be cut off. What would be cut off because they made their silver and their gold into idols? And the Medrash says it means their silver and gold will be cut off. That it is their wealth that will be lost because they dedicated their wealth to atzabim, to idols. We're going to come back to that, Mirtz Hashem. Zanach Eglech Shomron. Hashem says to, now Shomron was the capital of the northern country of Yisrael. So Hashem says that it is because of your Egel. Remember that Yeravam ben Nevat, who was the first king of the northern kingdom, that in order to keep the Jews from going to Yerushalayim to be Ola Regel, he created two different agolim, two different really golden calves, put one in the north and one in the south, and he had the Jews go to those places to worship instead of to the Beis HaMikdash. So because of that, your Egel has caused you, Shomron, to be rejected. Chara'a pi bam, I've become angry with them. Admasai lo yuchlu nikayon. Until when is this going to go on? They are unable to become clean from their sin that they've been doing with these agolim. This was the ongoing problem in the northern kingdom. This issue began with Yeravam ben Nevat, And it continued all throughout the years of the Northern Kingdom until the very last king, until Hoshea ben Elah. He was the only one who finally allowed the Jews to be Ola Regel. But until his time, all of the Northern kings prevented the Jews from being Ola Regel, and there were these agolim, there were these calves that were I don't know if the calves were actually worshipped. There was rampant avodah zarah going on, but they certainly were a distraction. Ki mi Yisrael v'hu, because it is from the Jews and it. That word v'hu needs explanation. What does it mean, v'hu? Charash asahu, a carpenter made it. V'lo Elohim hu, it is not a god. Ki shivavim yiyeh egel shomron, because the egel of Shomron will be as shovavim. Shovavim here means, or shivavim, excuse me. Ki shivavim yiyeh means shards, meaning it'll be smashed to pieces, the egel of Shomron. So, again, Chazal say over here that, what does it mean, ki mi Yisrael v'hu? Because from Yisrael and it. So, the Medrash says that when the Agolim were made in the Northern Kingdom, the money that was used to make those Agolim were collected from all of the people. So they all contributed to those agolim. So that's what it means, ki mi Yisrael, cause from the Jews, vihu, and it. Now, if we're talking about agolim in the Northern Kingdom, and we refer to who and it, so the Medrash says it's referring to the egel that we all know about, the previous one, the main one, the real egel hazahav. Because the real Egel Hazav had a similar thing. The money was collected from the Jewish people. They brought their own money forward, their own gold forward, and that's how they made the Egel Hazav. So, ki mi Yisrael, because the Agolim were made from the Jews, v'hu, and also the original Egel Hazav was made from the Jewish people. It was made by a carpenter, even though it's metal, so it's not really a carpenter as with wood, but it was formed by a human being rather than by Hashem. It is not a god. And it will eventually be smashed to shards, the egel of Shomron. Ki ruach yizra'u v'sufasa yitzaru, because with the wind they will sow, meaning the wind will make it difficult for them. The wind will blow away whatever they try to plant. V'sufasa yitzaru, and if they ever harvest, it will be in a tempest. A sufa means like a wild wind. Kama ain lo, he has no standing grain. Tzemach belia sekemach, they'll be sprouting, but it won't turn into flour. It won't become flour. Because even whatever comes up, ulaya se, even if something does grow, zarim yivla uhu, foreigners will swallow it. It'll be taken away by foreigners. They will not be able to harvest and to have. The grain won't yield a crop. Nivla Yisrael is swallowed up. Ata hayu v'agoyim, now they will be in the nations. Kichli ein chefetz bo, like a utensil that there is no desire in it. Kihema alu Ashur, because they went up to Ashur. Pera bodeid lo, they would wander on their own. They would wander around. Para means like a wild animal. Bodeid lo, just to wander through the wilderness. Ephraim hisnu ahavim. Now the Northern Kingdom is often referred to as Ephraim, and Ephraim hisnu ahavim. The word hisnu has various meanings. It could mean it could refer to a snake, a tanim, but the easier way to translate it, which Rashi actually goes with, is that from the word esnan. And esnan, the Torah says that there's an esnan zona, means the wages given to a prostitute. So hisnu ahavim, they looked for others that they would have a relationship with other than Hashem, and they gave an esnan, they gave payment for that. Now again, as we've said many times, that avodah zarah is often compared to arayas to adultery, because we are, so to speak, married to Hashem, and if Jews worship other things, then it is akin to adultery. So this would be a reference to that as well. Hisnu ahavim. Gam ki yisnu bagoyim, but even, now let's pause for a minute. So with these first nine psukim, everything has been very negative. But here we have a little bit of a turnaround. Gam ki yisnu bagoyim, even as they are involved with the other nations, ata kabetzeim, I will now gather them. V'yachelu ma'at, they will be a little bit humbled. Mimasa melech sarim, from the burden of the king of those other nations that they're trying to curry favor with. So the Jews, because they'll be in Golas, they had been trying to have a relationship with other nations, but in the end they'll be taken into Golas. That Golas will make the Jews humble a little bit, and that will enable Hashem to bring us back. Ki hirbo Ephraim mizbechos lachato, because Ephraim has had many altars to sin. Hoyulo mizbechos lachato, he had altars to sin. That's a repetition over there, that he had many altars to sin. Echtov lo rube torasi, I have written for him the abundance of my Torah. Kimozar nechshavu, they have been considered like foreigners. This, in a simple meaning, we're going to delve into this pasuk, but the simple meaning is that I have constantly sent them nevi'im to tell them about my Torah. I've made my Torah clear to them. However, they have been like foreigners with regard to the Torah and have not paid attention to it. Zivchei hav havai, the karbonos, the sacrifices that are to be burned on the Mizbeach, yizbechu vasar vayochelu, they should slaughter them as meat and eat them. In other words, don't bring me the animals as karbonos on my Mizbeach. Instead, keep the animal at home and slaughter it yourself and eat it on your own table. Hashem lo ratzam, Hashem doesn't want them. Ata yizkar avonam v'yifkod chatosam. Now their sins will be remembered and their sins will be visited upon them. Hema Mitzrayim yashuvu, they will return to Egypt. Vayishkach Yisrael oseyu, Yisrael has forgotten their maker. Vayiven hechalos, and they built edifices. V'yehuda hirba arim bitzuros. Now here we have a reference to Yehuda, even though the entire parak has been talking about Ephraim, the northern kingdom, but now it says, and Yehuda has made many fortified cities, which thinking they can protect themselves that way. V'shilachti esh b'arava, I will send fire in their cities, v'achla armen oseha, and it will consume their large buildings, their edifices. Here we have, once again, as this has been the theme in Hosea, that even though he is talking primarily to the northern kingdom, Hosea is constantly concerned that the southern kingdom, Yehuda, will learn from the ways of the northern kingdom, Ephraim. And therefore he throws in references to Yehuda being punished as well, if Yehuda will continue this system of learning from the northern kingdom, from Ephraim. There are a few points to emphasize over here, going back to the beginning of the perek. The Medrash tells us on the pasuk Gimel, verse 3, Zanach Yisrael Tov Oyev Yer Defo, that the Jews have rejected the Torah, they will be chased by the enemy. So the Medrash makes it clear over here that the study of Torah, if that is rejected, God forbid, then that brings the enemy upon the Jewish people. The study of Torah, if it is done properly, that keeps the enemy away from the Jewish people. It's very, very important to be aware that the primary thing that protects us Jews in Golus is Limud HaTorah, is the study of Torah. When we have all of the intense study of Torah that is going on, primarily in Eretz Yisrael, but other places as well, that is the Shmira, that's what protects us Jews throughout the world. It's very, very important to be aware of this. We tend to get a little caught up in I don't know if you want to call it a political discussion or in a perhaps a philosophical discussion about should people be learning full time and how many people should be learning full time, and you can get into all kinds of discussions like that. You can talk about it on a theoretical level, you can talk about it on a practical level, you can talk about people in our own city, you can talk about our own family members, we can talk about people in Eretz Yisrael. People can talk and talk and talk and talk. And there may be some purpose in such a discussion. I always find those discussions to be somewhat pointless because we who are having the discussions have no control over what is going on in the broader Jewish world, and therefore I don't see any purpose in the discussion. I don't see any reason to have an opinion. It's happening. Well, you can like it or don't like it, but it's happening. So that just, you know, I just feel like there's more important things to talk about. But you want to talk about it, you can talk about it. But the context of the discussion has to acknowledge the fact that it is the Limud HaTorah that protects us more than anything else. It is not the Israeli Defense Forces that protects us more than anything else. It is the Limud HaTorah that protects us more than anything else. Now, you have to do Hishtadlus. So therefore, you need an IDF. If you don't have an IDF, then we're not doing our proper Hishtadlus. So you have to have that. But it is the Limud HaTorah that fuels the IDF and gives them the ability to protect Eretz Yisrael. And it is also what protects us here in the United States. The reason why, Baruch Hashem, the terrible events in Pittsburgh have not happened, Baruch Hashem, on a regular basis is because of the Limud HaTorah. It is the Limud HaTorah that protects us more than anything else. And that is a very, very important thing. A person has to understand that. When, you know, they have a with these discussions of the as I said before, you can talk about there's a lot of learning going on. Should people really be working? There's so much lack of parnasa, and you can have these discussions. So clearly, however you're going to discuss it, clearly there is a different approach in Eretz Yisrael than there is in the United States. In Eretz Yisrael, in the Haredi world, it is expected that the default is that a young man will learn. That is the expectation. In the United States, the pressure is not as great, and there's a greater acceptance for different expressions of Avodas Hashem. That, I think, is clear. I don't think one has to debate that point. That is a fact. I once was talking to my Rebbe, to Rav Tzvi Berkowitz, about this difference, and we were just discussing, I was just asking him about it, and saying, you know, I was just asking for more clarity of the proper hashkafa, the proper way to think, and he made this point to me that we can have a particular hashkafa and we can implement it and we can project it to our own families and to our own communities, and we can have whatever hashkafa we're going to have, and you can choose what you're comfortable with. But he said this point that you have to understand that regardless of what you're comfortable with, but you have to understand that the Shmira for Klal Yisrael comes from the Limud HaTorah. That's where the Shmira is coming from. And as we've talked about before, Limud HaTorah, by definition, does not happen in a vacuum. Unless you are Rav Shimon Bar Yochai and his son, who were in the cave for 13 years and were sustained by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and there was no other support for them, so they just learned. But that is an anomaly. The way that Limud HaTorah normally works is that you need a community that brings about Limud HaTorah. That's the way it normally works. You need, if there are men learning, there have to be wives supporting that learning. If there are families who are in learning, there have to be other families that are supporting the learning. It doesn't happen by itself. You need an entire nation, really, that is pushing Limud HaTorah. That is what Klal Yisrael is meant to have and meant to be. So the when you have such a society and people are dedicated to make sure there is Limud HaTorah, and that happens in many levels. There's a person who's actually learning the Torah. There is a person who is providing for the person who's learning the Torah. There is a wife who is involved in enabling her husband to be learning the Torah. There are so many different levels. There's administration, and there's all kinds of different things that have to go on in order for there to be an appropriate Limud HaTorah going on. When the whole society, preferably all of Klal Yisrael, is focused on making sure there is Limud HaTorah, that is what provides the Shmira, the protection for Klal Yisrael. It's a very, very important point, and any kind of discussion has to start from there, acknowledging that, and then one can talk about, okay, so once we've acknowledged that point, okay, how many people should be actually learning, how many people, then you can get into a talk like that. But you have to, the starting point is that it is critical for our own protection, everybody's protection, that there be intense Limud HaTorah going on in Klal Yisrael. Yeah.
How do we know that two things? One is that it's not the learning, let's say people are in Chutz La'aretz. How do we know that it's not that's a Chutz that's also providing protection for Eretz Yisrael?
Oh, it certainly is. That's no question.
I'm only in Eretz Yisrael.
No. It's not learning in Eretz Yisrael. I'm just bringing up Eretz Yisrael because there is a lot more learning going on in Eretz Yisrael than outside of Eretz Yisrael.
Okay, so we don't know. I mean, I guess every mitzvah in Eretz Yisrael is more.
I didn't mean because okay. It's in Eretz Yisrael. I just meant that it happens to be that today, in our day and age, there happen to be, you know, thousands and thousands and thousands of people learning in Eretz Yisrael, so that's where it is, and that's where the culture is pushing it much more than here.
And how do we know that it's the Limud HaTorah that's providing the protection and not the being Shomer Torah and Mitzvot?
Right, so that's what I'm trying to point out to you. That is the Hashkafa that my Rebbe explained to me, and that is what the Medrash is saying on this Pasuk, that it is particularly the Limud HaTorah that is providing the Shmira. When I say Limud HaTorah again, it is not only the actual person who is learning, it is the entire focus on that person learning that
even
provides the Shmira.
How do we know it's not the Medrash,
the Torah? Yeah, when the Medrash says it says Limud HaTorah. Yeah, I'm sorry, I didn't make that clear. When the Medrash mentions Torah over here, Ein Tov Ela Torah, it's talking about, it then gives examples of actual Limud HaTorah. That's what it's talking about. Of course, the reference here to the Agalim and to the Egel Hazav, that's an obvious connection. That when Yeravam ben Nevat came up with the Agalim, that it was a connection to the Egel Hazav, which is almost shocking that should happen after all that we endured and are still enduring because of the Avera of the Egel Hazav, that there should be an Egel, the two Agalim that Yeravam ben Nevat made. The Egel that we made in the Midbar, we spoke about this in our Chumash Shir many years ago when we did it in Parshas Kisisa. But the Egel Hazav was because of the worship of the Mitzrim, which they worshipped the Egel, as we say in Ma'oz Tzur, that Mitzrayim is called Malchus Egla. Because Mitzrayim, although they also worshipped the sheep, but that was a borrowed worship. Their main worship was that of the Egel. That was their main worship, that of the calf. And that's why, it's a whole, we've talked about it before, that's why Yosef, who's compared to a shor, to a bull, that's why he is so connected to Mitzrayim. Because he fits in with Mitzrayim. Mitzrayim is represented by the bovine family. So Yosef fits there as well. So the Egel of the Egel Azav was simply the Jews slipping back into what they had seen in Egypt all those years. The Yeravam ben Nevat, that happens so many years, hundreds of years after we're already post Mitzrayim, post Midbar, and we're in Eretz Yisrael, and yet you see that it's still pervasive, that that's what he picks, and that's what the Jews follow in their in the Northern Kingdom. Yes?
So I had two questions. When you had said that the ego was not God-made, but yet the first one, didn't they just put the pasuk in?
Yes.
So it's kind of God-made. It wasn't like a mold that a carpenter would make and then they pour
it
in.
Yep.
So I was kind of confused about that. And then the other thing is you said the first ego is of the women didn't participate.
Correct.
Here, did the women participate?
It doesn't say. It's a good question. It doesn't say whether the women did or didn't.
And what about the Levium?
I assume...
Because the Levium are in the southern part mostly,
aren't they? Some are in the northern, some in the northern part. I assume from its omission that everybody participated. As if a group didn't participate, it probably would have been noted. So I assume everybody participated here. As far as the forming of it, the Pasuk says, Vayatzar oso bacheret, that which means that Aaron, that he formed it using a cheret is a... if you're sculpting something, what do you call that tool that you use, like a metal tool tip? I don't know what the right word is, but a sharp implement. So that's what it says in the Pasuk. Now the Medrash says he didn't actually sculpt it, but rather he threw it in the fire, and actually he says, Vayetzeh ha'egel hazeh, this egel came out. And then the Medrash says, how did that happen? Either it was the sorcerers of the Egyptians, the Erev Rabu did it, or it was that piece of metal, that piece of whatever it was that had Hashem's name on it. Right.
Wasn't it what brought up Yosef's bones?
Yeah, that's the second shot of it. Right, okay. right. But either way, Hashem didn't want it to happen. It wasn't his intention for this to happen. This is what someone did. So it was a human being that made it happen. But yes, it may have used some supernatural source. That's true. The pasuk, I told you I would get back to this pasuk. One moment, please. The pasuk, yes, in pasuk dal in verse 4. So I'm sorry, I did a little bit out of order here. So in pasuk dal verse 4, so the pasuk says at the end of the pasuk, kaspamu zahavam asu lahem atzabim, silver and gold they made for themselves into idols, lemani kares, that it should be cut off, which means that their wealth should be lost. This is a constant struggle that we have, that Hashem really wants to shower bracha upon us. And that bracha can be a great deal of wealth. And Hashem wants to really shower the Jews with a great deal of wealth. But unfortunately, once we have wealth, it's very, very hard to remain steadfast in our service to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. As the Pasuk says, Vayishman Yeshurun Vayivat, Yeshurun, the Jewish people, Vayishman has become fat, which means has become bloated with all of the wealth and all of that we have, Vayivat, and then he rebels. It's a very difficult thing to remain steadfast. Really what's difficult is the transition. See, as long as the Jews are in a state of poverty, in a state of being afflicted, not having freedom, so we're kind of fighting for survival. So that's one state of being. And in that state of being, so that's been the primary state of being in Golus. And we learned how to be Ovdei Hashem and serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu properly under those circumstances. Sometimes those circumstances were terrible, terrible circumstances. And we did our best to be Ovdei Hashem even under those circumstances. Whenever you transition, so then it takes getting used to. And the transition is often very difficult. And in the Golus that we're in now, we're in a Golus of affluence, even though many people would say that they personally are not affluent, which is true perhaps in context. But remember, compared to what was in the shtetls of Europe, we are all fabulously wealthy. Fabulously wealthy. Every single one of us. Even those of us who are struggling mightily to make ends meet, but we're still fabulously wealthy compared to what was in the shtetls. And so we're in a Golus right now of affluence, and that is a different challenge. It's a completely different challenge than the challenge of poverty. And so it's a whenever you have a new challenge, so a person has to readjust, and Klal Yisrael has to readjust. That takes time, and it's difficult to do. And what the Pasuk is saying is that Klal Yisrael, unfortunately, when we do get that kind of wealth, we often fail in using it appropriately. So here, this is an application of that. The Klal Yisrael had all this silver and gold, but they would use it for idols, which then Hashem says, then I got to take it away, because it's not doing anybody any good. The only purpose of it is if it will assist Klal Yisrael in serving Hashem. There's no purpose in there being wealth if that wealth will only take us away from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Chas V'Shalom. So it is a great responsibility to ensure that we use whatever wealth we have in the service of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The Pasuk tells us in Pasuk Yud, verse 10, now, we translated this pasuk, Gam ki yisnu bagoyim, even as we are involved in relationships with the other nations, still Hashem says, I will gather them in. Atar kabtzeim. Vayachelu ma'at, they were somewhat humbled. Mimasa melech sarim, from the burden of the king of the nation that they're involved with. So the Gemara here turns this pasuk almost on its head and reads it as follows. Gam ki yisnu bagoyim. But when the Jews yisnu, now yisnu, you know that often Aramaic is similar to Hebrew, and there are certain letters that are often interchangeable, but the Hebrew will use one letter, and then in Aramis it will change to another letter. One of those exchanges is a shin for a suf. The word yishnu would be yisnu in Aramis. In fact, just to show you this word so we can see it clearly, the word, as we know, is Mishnah. I'll write it in Hebrew and in English. Mishnah is the singular of Mishnayis. The in Aramis, the word is Misna. Or, as you'll see, the Gemara will say, Masnisin, our Mishnah. The word Misna is the word for a Mishnah in Aramis. In Aramis, in the Gemara, will say Tinan, which means we learned. That word comes from the word in Kriyas Shema of Vishinantam. Vishinanta means, and you will study, you will teach, you actually means to speak in Torah. That's what it means. Shanan. In Aramis, it's Tanan. Same word. So here, what the Gemara says is that Gam ki yisnu vagoyim, as they read it yishnu, as they study Torah amongst the nations, Atakabit same, I will now gather them in. Because they are studying Torah, even when they are amongst the nations, because of that I will gather them in. Not only that, Vayecholu me'at, if they only humble themselves a little bit, which means they don't intensely study Torah, but they study Torah somewhat, then Mimasa melech sarim, then from the burden of the king, I will remove it somewhat. I will lessen their burden from the king that they are under when they're in Galus. The Gemara says that if they learn intensely, I will take them out of Galus. If they don't learn intensely, but they learn somewhat, I will still use that to reduce their burden that they are under from the foreign king. That's why the Gemara reads this pasuk, again, emphasizing this point that it is the Limud HaTorah that will ultimately get us out of Galus. And if it doesn't get us out of Galus, because we're not doing it intensely enough, but it will still afford some degree of protection and reduce the burden from the foreign king. One more discussion of Torah is in Pasuk Yud Beis, verse 12. This is going to take us a little bit of time to really understand this pasuk. Echtav lo rubei torasi kemo zar nechshavu. So we read this pasuk in this simple reading. I write for them, or I've written for them, the abundance of my Torah, which Rashi tells us means I'm constantly admonishing them through Nevi'im, telling them about the Torah. Yet kemo zar nechshavu, but they are considered like foreigners. They don't pay attention and they continue to sin. The Gemara here says that from this pasuk, the Gemara has a discussion about it, but the Gemara says, if I were to ask you, we know that there is Torah Shebiksav, there's the written Torah, and there's Torah Sheval Peh, there's the oral Torah. Which one is, which one has more information? The Torah Shebiksav, the written Torah, or the Torah Sheval Peh, the oral Torah?
They're together.
They are definitely together. But the Gemara breaks them apart and says, which one is bigger?
Oral.
So the oral Torah seems to clearly be bigger. We know that up until the Mishnah was committed to writing, then the oral Torah was just that. It was oral. And you had the written Torah. But once it was committed to writing, and then subsequently, a few hundred years later, the Gemara was committed to writing, and the Gemara embodies the bulk of Torah Sheval Peh, of the oral Torah, but just look at the size of a Shas compared to the size of a Chumash, or even of a Tanakh. Tanakh, 24 books, it's, okay, you've got it all in there, okay, right. So there's a lot there, so there's certainly a lot there, but a Shas is much, much bigger, as we know from Daf Yomi, that a Shas has, at least the way we have it, 2,711 pages, two sides of the page. So that's double-sided. So the Tanakh is smaller than that. There's much more information in the Torah Sheba'al Peh than in the Torah Shebiksav. So the Gemara reads it this way, Echtav lo rubei torasi? You think I would write down most of my Torah? Most of my Torah is not written down. Most of my Torah is Baal Peh. It's not written down. Kemar Zar Nechshavu, the Gemara leaves that out. But Echtav Lo Rubi Torasi, I'm not writing down most of my Torah. Most of my Torah is Baal Peh, is by heart. Now, let's for a moment, let's just consider what this means, Torah Sheba'al Peh. This is a little hard for people in our generation to really think about because the Torah today is in writing. Even the Torah Sheba'al Peh is in writing. Not just the Gemara, but take a look in our Beis Medrash, which has a small library comparatively, compared to the big Batei Midrashos of the big yeshivas. We have a relatively small amount of Sfarim, and yet we have shelves and shelves and shelves and shelves and shelves of Sfarim, and it's only and this is considered a small library. So we have so much committed to writing these days. Going to a major Sfarim store in one of the bigger cities, and I mean, it never ends. It's just this on and on and on and on and on. So it's hard for us to really put ourselves into the mindset of a Torah Sheba'al Peh, really an oral Torah. Moshe Rabbeinu came down from Har Sinai with the Luchos. Let's talk about when he came down the second time on Yom Kippur. He came down with the Luchos. So he has the Aseres HaDibros. But he also has an abundance of Torah Sheba'al Peh. Throughout the 40 years, the Torah gets written down. There's a machlokas, how it was written down. We've talked about this before, whether it was written down as things happened or whether it was written down at the end of the 40 years. Be that as it may, certainly by the end of the 40 years, we have an entire Torah as we have in our Aron Kodesh. So we have a whole Torah. But there is a huge, huge amount of explanation that goes along with that written Torah. We know the written Torah cannot be read properly without the oral Torah. You read it without the oral Torah, you get actually serious errors, serious mistakes. So Moshe Rabbeinu taught this oral Torah, this Torah Shebaal Peh. So, Moshe Rabbeinu, we all had a nevuah. We spoke about this when we learned about it in Parshas Yisro and Mishpatim. We all had a nevuah that Moshe Rabbeinu is Hashem's Navi. And therefore, we trusted him. The Pasuk says, "V'gam b'cha yaminu le'olam." The Jews will trust in you forever. So we trusted Moshe Rabbeinu when he told us that Hashem gave instructions, and this is what Hashem said, we accepted it. There was the problem of Korach, who didn't accept it, but that was dealt with. The Jews as a whole accepted what Moshe Rabbeinu said. So here we are, the Jewish people in the Midbar. We don't have any other responsibilities in the Midbar. No one had a job in the Midbar. Right? The man came from the sky. So the Jews dedicated themselves to understanding and absorbing what it is that Moshe Rabbeinu was telling them, and to study it. And they did. And so the Dar Dea, this incredible generation, they knew Torah. And they knew they had the written Torah by the time Moshe Rabbeinu passed away. And they also had a wealth of oral Torah. Now Moshe Rabbeinu passes away. And then, of course, he is succeeded by Yehoshua. And as the Rambam enumerates, in each successive generation, there is a person who is considered to be the steward of Torah, the one who is in charge, either one person or perhaps one person with a group with that person, who are in charge of the transmission of Torah and basically the final say over what is and what is not accurate for the Torah. Why do you need a person to be the steward of the Torah? You need that because the Torah is oral. If the Torah would be written down and it would be completely explained in writing, so then open the book and read it. Why do I need someone who is officially the steward of Torah? Perhaps just to make sure that that subsequent copies are made accurately? Maybe. That's not a full-time job, you would think. So even though the Gemara does say that there are the word sofrim refers to those who were experts in the written Torah and knew every vav and every yud and every aleph and knew exactly so that transmission could be accurate. But still, the steward of Torah is a much bigger job than that. The one who's wearing kisro shel Torah, the crown of Torah, the job is to make sure that the transmission of Torah is accurate and is done properly. And that's necessary because it's all by heart. So someone has to be the final word. That goes on from generation to generation. So if you're born into a generation long after Moshe Rabbeinu, as we are, but still at the time when it was primarily oral, so that means you're growing up with a text. And you're taught this text. And you're taught this text is not everything. This text is just the written part of it. Here's all the oral part of it. You need to understand this. You need to commit it to memory, and etc. And you study it. But it's not like it's just a set of rules. It's a debate. It's presented as a debate. This is what's going on down in the basement. You hear the hum? What's going on over there? They're not just reciting multiplication tables, right? They're debating. Is it this way? Is it that way? But I could say this. I could say that. That's the way Torah is taught. So here you have someone growing up and being taught that way. And then they enter adulthood. So there is this entire culture of people who have a written Torah, but it's primarily oral, and they're debating what's right and what's wrong, what's accurate, what's inaccurate. And there is a final say. Sometimes the final say is, we don't know, and we have to leave it as a machlokas. We just don't know the answer, because we've forgotten. We've lost the transmission. Sometimes that is the final answer, not in the first generations after Moshe Rabbeinu, but certainly as time went on, that started to happen. So you're a person at that time is relying heavily on the transmission of previous generations. A person at that time certainly sees themselves as looks at themselves in a line back from Moshe Rabbeinu. Because how does my Rebbe know this? And how did his Rebbe know that? And how did his Rebbe know that? There's nothing, there's no record on paper or parchment or stone to say how this is true. It all goes back to Moshe Rabbeinu. It takes a lot of emunah. Maybe somebody made something up. Maybe somebody made a mistake. It takes a lot of emunah. And that is the culture that we are brought up in. Now eventually, because people could not remember it, it got committed to writing. And today, when even though, of course, we have Rabbeim and we have students, and those students eventually become Rabbeim themselves and teach the next generation, so we have that. But the because it's committed to writing, there's something lost. What's often lost in the committed to writing is, I don't know the answer. Oh, I'll open up the book and take a look. So, am I... Now, I understand that book has this information because it was written down going all the way back to Moshe Rabbeinu. But the book becomes the main thing. I use that term just to bring the point home. It's a safer, but to bring the point home. That becomes the Gemara, the Shulchan Aruch. That becomes the source of the Torah, of the Oral Torah. But really the source of the Oral Torah is Moshe Rabbeinu from Hashem. That's really the source of the Oral Torah. That's the source of the written Torah also. But in the written Torah, since we have a Sefer Torah, so as the Gemara itself says, open the Sefer Torah and take a look at it. It's there. But there was supposed to be a massive body of information that there is no place to look. You can't look anywhere. There's no record. The only thing you can do is go to a teacher and find out. And that teacher got it from their teacher, from their teacher, from their teacher. It's the only source of information you have. There is no other source of information. That's what was always meant to be. It's not online. You can't search for it. You can't do a search. It's in people's heads. It's a completely different method of having information than the entire world would accept. The Medrash says that why is it that Hashem made it that Torah Sheba'al Peh, the bulk of Torah, is oral and not written? And the Gemara says two things. The Medrash says two things. One, if the Torah would ever fall into the hands of the non-Jews, which it did with the Targum Shivim, with Talmai and the Targum Shivim, the Septuagint, where the Torah was forcibly translated into Greek, which we are going to, unless Mashiach comes, we're going to have a fast day for this. This is one of the reasons for the fast day on Tuesday of next week. So the if it would fall into the hands of the non-Jews, they would not be able to access the Torah Sheba'al Peh. They would only be able to access the written Torah, but the bulk of Torah is off limits to them because there is no record. There's nothing, you can't get it from anywhere. You can't steal it. You can't put it in your museum. You can't read it. It is off limits. It is in people's heads. That's where it is. And it's not typically in one person's head. It's in a lot of people's heads. And when it's inside someone's head, it's very hard to extract it, certainly to extract it accurately, and certainly to extract it in its entirety is not something that is accessible. So it keeps the Torah squarely in the hands of the Jews. That's one of the reasons. But there's another reason as well.
Nowadays, isn't it?
Yes, so that's compromised today. That is compromised. There's no question. That is compromised. When Chazal decided to write it down, they understood there was something being lost. This is one of the things that was lost. Yes, he made it accessible to people who it should not have been accessible to. But it was necessary in order that it be accessible to the Jews. I want you to know that today, art scroll Gemaras are almost ubiquitous. In yeshivas, they discourage the use of an art scroll Gemara because they're trying to teach their students to be able to learn without an English translation. That's the whole point of a yeshiva, is to be able to emerge from that, being able to learn without that. But there are all over the place. We have a full set downstairs, of course, and everybody has it. But in my formative years in yeshiva, that's when the great debate was raging. Should they translate the Gemara or not? It was a great debate. And the argument against translating the Gemara was, because then it makes it accessible to people who shouldn't have access to it, because it's Torah Shebaal Peh. The argument to translate, which ultimately won out, is, but it makes it more accessible to so many more Jews who need to have access to it, and that overrode the loss. But there is a loss. There is a loss. The loss is that although Jews have it, now the people who shouldn't have it also have it, and that is a loss. There's a gain and there's a loss. The gain outweighs the loss, but there is a loss. But there's another reason, the Medrash says, for why the bulk of the Torah is oral and not written down. Besides that it's off limits to the non-Jews, and that is that by keeping it oral, I'm trying to remember exactly how the Medrash says it. I remember the point of it. I just don't remember the exact language of the Medrash. By keeping it oral, so then from the Jews' perspective, we don't have it written down. Meaning, it's not just that it's not accessible to others, but it means that we have to study it intensely. You see, when you have something in a book, you take notes. People are taking notes here. Notes are a great thing for you to refer back to. It's a wonderful thing. But the other thing, what notes does, and I also take notes. It's a good thing. But what notes does is, what it can do is, it can be, a person can think, oh yeah, that's in my notebook. Oh yeah, that's right. Because I have it written down, so I can always refer to it. So I don't need to commit it to memory, because it's in the notebook. So that's a good thing, because otherwise we wouldn't remember it. But if you're forced to remember it, you are forced to really, really, really study it. Because as you know, hearing it one time, you're not going to remember it one time. Not unless you are blessed with an incredible memory. And so it forces a much more intense study of Torah. The study of the Torah has to be incredibly intense for a person to really absorb it all and to really have it at their fingertips and to be able to have recall for any point that they need. And this aspect only is true because of the fact that there's an oral Torah that is much larger than the written Torah. Yeah.
The other thing that's lost is, if you know it's up to you and your memory to hand it down to the next generation, mm-hmm. you feel more important than if, oh, it's in a book, and if I know it or
that's
if I don't
right.
know it, it's not so important.
You're absolutely right. Yeah. You're absolutely right. I want to share with you, the last thing we'll do tonight, I want to share with you a personal story. When I was in yeshiva, I think I shared this with you, but many years ago. I was in yeshiva, and I was a bachur in yeshiva, so we were schooled in Ner Yisrael with the picture in front of us of the Rosh Yeshiva Rav Ruderman Zechanu Livracha. At that time he was still alive, and he was our picture of greatness in Torah, which he deserved to have that title. Rav Ruderman Zechanu Livracha, the Rosh Yeshiva, had likely a photographic memory. He had things at his fingertips. He had Shas at his fingertips. He had so many Svarim that he knew by heart, and he was able to pull out proofs from all over the place. It was unbelievable what he could do. We idealistic young men were raised in yeshiva with the goal to be like Rav Ruderman. That was our goal. Okay, so now we're older, and perhaps that was a foolish goal. Maybe somebody could have reached it, but that was our goal. That was our goal. We were idealistic, you know how it is, and that's what we were shooting for. We want to know Shas, we want to know all Kol HaTorah Kula. We're going to know it like the Rosh Yeshiva. At that time, long before the internet, so at that time, they had just started to to transition from floppy disks to larger memory capability. Of course, there were no USBs. So at that time, the CD-ROMs started coming out. And somebody put the CD-ROM, put Shas onto a CD-ROM. It was the first iteration of the Bar-Ilan. Right now they have a whole bunch of Sfarim on their thing. But at that time, it was Shas. Maybe there was also Tanakh, but it was Shas. And it came out. And people were raving about it. People were saying, it's great, you can do a search, you can type in a keyword and it'll tell you where it is, all over Shas. It's great. It's unbelievable. And when I heard about it, I don't think I was the only one with this reaction, but I know it's just not my personal reaction. When I heard about it, it was so deflating and it was so hurtful to hear about it. I had not seen it yet. Someone had told me about it. I couldn't believe it. And then when they explained it, and it was such a deflating, depressing thing. Because what that said to me is, why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu enable such technology? HaKadosh Baruch Hu must have enabled such technology because he's saying that the age of the Rav Rudermans is coming to an end. And from here on in, you're going to need this crutch. You're going to need this tool. And don't just, you can throw away your hopes of knowing Torah like that. It was a very, very sad realization to me. Now, I don't think it's 100% true. I think a person still can do it. But the amount of people who can achieve that has diminished incredibly. Because it was a sign, here, take this because you're not going to reach it otherwise. To me, that was a terribly deflating realization. And that is just another step in this moving away from Torah Shebaal Peh, from knowing it orally to having it committed, not only in writing, but now on a device where you can just find anything you want. That was depressing. I'm sorry for ending that way, but that was...
It is. Hashem puts things in us. Hashem puts something in the world.
Yes, we needed it, so he put it in the world. That's right.
He said at some point that it required a lot of emunah, this, in effect, Masora, right? So now we don't need that same amount of emunah because...
We don't need the same kind of emunah because it's written down. That's right now, even though it's true... When I open up the Gemara, really what I should be thinking is, I'm really opening up something that came from Moshe Rabbeinu. But that's not the way human beings think. It's a book. So it's in the book. So okay, here it is. When we open up, here, this is the words of Hosea, which is a nevuah from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So I think it's a little easier here to remember, constantly remember, these are words that are coming from Hashem to Hosea. But when you open up a Gemara, and it's not a nevuah, it's this debate back and forth about a particular, the particular halacha in Torah. It's just hard to remember. This is Ravina and Ravashi. Who got it from their Rebbeim? Who got it from there? Who got it back? Rabbi Akiva. Going back. Hillel. Moshe Rabbeinu. It's just hard to have that.
Unfortunately, in school, some of them, they teach it like
Rabbi, related to the story that you told, I had learned with computers many, many years ago and all, and I was basically anti-technology and anti-computer, even though that's the world that I was in. But I didn't like, what people thought about. And then when I went to a discovery seminar here in Atlanta, I said, aha, computers can be used for something good.
There's no question there's good. There's no question there's good.
I remember the light bulb.
But even my story, the CD-ROM that I was talking about, was a good thing. It wasn't a bad thing. It was just what it meant that was hurtful. Okay. For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. For those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site.